This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson. Before we sign off for the Christmas break, I've invited Aileen Carson, a career change coach, along to give us some top tips on how to make a successful career change. If a lot of people over the holidays might be using the time to reevaluate what's happened over the past 12 months and maybe think about making some kind of change. Aileen did exactly that in her career on a number of occasions, and more recently she's taken the bull by the horns and stepped off the corporate ladder to launch her own coaching business full time. So Aileen's coming along today to talk about her tips for making a successful change. Welcome. Aileen, I'm really delighted to have you on the podcast today. It feels like this has been a long time coming. We've known each other professionally for almost a year now, I think it is. And quite a lot has changed with you professionally over that year.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for inviting you onto the podcast, Jane. I'm delighted to be here.
Brilliant. You're a professional coach and you've been doing that for some time. But until very recently, you had another kind of day job in inverted commas, didn't you?
Yes. I've been working in the housing sector for something like 15 to 20 years, quite a long time. And I qualified as a coach a few years ago. And my initial plan was to do some part-time coaching and carry on with my day job because I was enjoying what I was doing. But over the last, particularly the last year or so, I just developed such a passion for coaching and I decided that I couldn't quite make them both work. I've managed to reduce my hours to 4 days a week in my job, but it still didn't leave very much time to actually focus on my coaching business. So I thought that there would be a natural tipping point where I could get enough coaching work in that I could then give up the day job. But it didn't really work out like that because I just didn't have enough time to develop my business. So I realised just a few weeks ago that I was going to have to make a massive leap of faith, which is what I did. So I left my job 4 or 5 weeks ago now. So yes, so the full-time self-employment is still very new, but so far, anyway, I'm very glad I made the leap.
And I know we're going to come on today to talk about your top five pieces or just advice or things you've learned, pieces of guidance for anyone thinking of making any kind of change, whether that's going in a new direction completely or looking for a new job. But there's a couple of things I'm really interested in, actually. One is often we are sold this idea of a side hustle and that you can make it successful. And lots of people have done, I'm sure. But there's this sort of push me, pull you thing as well, in that in order to make anything a success and certainly a business, it does take time and effort and a lot of marketing, perhaps with a small M, in order to build your revenue streams. So I guess at what point did you feel, actually, this is right for me, this is what I want to be doing full time, and I need more time to be able to dedicate to it? And how did you go about that stepping off off the edge of the cliff, I suppose, from a PAYE job to working for yourself?
It really was a bit like jumping off a cliff. I'd been thinking about it probably for quite a number of months, actually, but I still hoped that I could carry on doing both at the same time. But I realised that, just as you said, actually, I just didn't have enough time or energy, actually, to really focus on my own business. And I realised that I was going to end up, if I carried on the way I was going to end up doing two things badly rather than one thing really well. So I knew that the time was coming where I couldn't really continue to do both really well. And also we were going through quite a lot of changes at work. And it just seemed, well, there's never a good time for these things, but it just seemed like a better time than it had done previously to actually make the leap. So I thought about it for a long time. I talked over with friends, I talked over with other coaches. And there was a huge amount of fear involved. It certainly wasn't an easy thing to do. Making the decision to leave my job wasn't that difficult because I knew that my heart lay with coaching and that was what I really wanted to do. So I knew that I was doing the right thing. But it was quite terrifying, actually, walking away from a job with a regular income, which was, I mean, nothing's particularly secure these days, but it was relatively secure-ish, to move into a career where there really wasn't an awful lot of security. But I knew that I really wanted to do it. I was absolutely loving coaching. I was loving the clients that I was meeting. Quite seriously, over the last year, I'd spent marketing myself and what I could do. So I knew that I wasn't completely starting from scratch. And I also knew that a lot of the skills and experience that I'd had over the last 20, 30 years of my working life, I knew that a lot of these would come into play and be really helpful. But yeah, there was a lot of fear involved, and that took a little while to work through. And there still is, to be honest. It hasn't exactly gone away. But I'm certainly really glad I did it. And I also think that fear is something that really holds people back. I knew that this is what I wanted to do. I knew that in terms of being the most sensible option, it possibly wasn't financially. But I knew that I would regret it if I didn't do it. I rarely regret things that I've done, but I knew that if I don't at least try this, I'll regret it. And I knew deep down, I know that I can do this. And I think you have to have a little bit of self-belief as well, that there's a lot of doubts in there, but I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And I still know that that is what I want to do and I can do it. But yes, it does take a lot of effort and quite a lot of reflection as well on trying to overcome that fear to actually make that jump.
I love that point about rarely regret things that you have done. At the end of time, when you're lying there and you're thinking, actually, gosh, I wish I had done X, or rather than I wish I hadn't done Y. I think that's very relatable.
Yes, exactly. And I knew that would be the case. I thought, if I don't do this, how am I going to know if I can actually do it? Sometimes you have to give yourself a bit of a push. So we'll see how it works out.
Yes. Oh, well, best of luck. Coming on to then what we're going to talk about today, obviously these five top things, and they don't have to be in any particular order, just five things that you would advise based on your experience and obviously as a coach for anyone looking for a new job or looking to change what they're doing.
My first piece of advice would be to look at the experience that you've gained over the years. And this doesn't necessarily need to be paid employment. That's what people tend to think about first of all. And that may well be the most relevant depending on what job you're going into. But looking at the previous jobs that you've done, what experience you've gained, also looking at any perhaps voluntary work or any experiences or any activities or hobbies that you've done outside work, all these are relevant. So if you actually look at what you've done and break them down to look at what experience you've gained throughout any of these jobs or activities, if you have a job in mind that you're looking to apply for, you know, go through the job description, the person's specification, and see what experience the employer is looking for. You might not meet every single criteria, you probably won't, but that's fine. I think if you meet, I don't know, say 3/4 of the criteria there, it's definitely worth going for. But yeah, just definitely looking back at all the experience that you've gained throughout all the different things you've done in your life. It can take a little while, especially if you've been working for a long time or you've done a lot of things outside of work. But just look at all the different experiences you've had. If it's paid employment, look at the jobs that you've done, the tasks that have been required. And just look at what you've had to do in order to be successful in those particular jobs or activities. So any experience, I think, can be really useful.
It's a really good point. My background is in corporate communications and marketing. And when I left that, driven by this desire to try and help women find more flexible roles, I went and set up a recruitment business. Now, I know nothing about recruitment, but I thought, how hard can it be? I know these amazing women who are looking for roles, and I know people in companies who are looking to hire people. So I thought, surely I can do this. But what was so interesting is that over the sort of 18 months, 2 years that I did that, I kept reverting to the bit I loved, which was the marketing, the communications of the business, the PR, the standing on platforms and shouting about the changes I needed to see and wanted to see, which is kind of fundamentally how I've come to be doing what I'm doing now as well, which is effectively helping coaches to sell their skills and services as well. And it's only been recently that I have felt comfortable in saying, yes, that's what I do. That's what I enjoy doing. It's what I always seem to revert back to. Even running the Facebook group is a big community. It's effectively communications to a large community. And yet I just hadn't seen and been able to join those dots. So, yeah, it's really interesting you saying that's surely the first point where you should start looking back over time and what you've done and seeing kind of the trends?
Yeah, definitely. And very often there'll be things that we've forgotten about. Sometimes I look back over my CV and I've been working for a long time. And I've done a lot of different jobs. You know, some people stay in one job for many, many years. I haven't done that. I've moved around quite a lot, worked in different sectors and done different jobs. My career certainly hasn't been linear. It's more of, I think, what people call squiggly careers. That's how I would describe mine. But, you know, sometimes you forget, especially if you have had a number of jobs, you forget what you have actually done over the years. You do sometimes have to just sit down and just reflect back on the different jobs that you've done and what you've learned from them as well, because you'll have picked up lots of things, even if it's not things that you're using every day, but there will be things in there that are relevant and that can be really useful to another employer.
Yeah, it's really true. And again, for our listeners or members of our online community who I think often struggle, it comes up in the Facebook group an awful lot where women have had time out of the workforce and feel they've done nothing or have no employable skills. And yet they are the ones who are always there volunteering at the bake sale or always there organising things for people. And as you say, it's that thing of looking at the things you do with your day and seeing where the themes or the key trends that come out of what it is you like doing and you're good at doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, because it's not just looking at what experience you've gained, but it's actually looking at what you enjoy doing, because you might have experience in a particular area. You might want a job that's completely different. You might not be looking to carry on doing the same thing because you simply just don't enjoy it anymore, or perhaps it's run its course. So I think looking at what you actually enjoy doing and what you want to get out of work is really important as well.
Yes, certainly. Brilliant. So let's move on to your second tip.
Okay, this kind of follows on from the experience sort of part, but identifying your skills, particularly your transferable skills. And by that, I mean skills you can take with you to any job. You've probably picked up skills over the years, not just at work, but things you do outside work that you might not even recognise. Sometimes people find this quite hard to do, and it might take talking to other people, such as colleagues or family members or friends, and asking them what they think you're good at. Just something that you mentioned just a moment ago, Jane, about looking at the skills that you enjoy using, because you might be very skilled in something, very good at it, but you might not enjoy doing it. So if you're looking for another job, that might not be a skill that you particularly want to use in another job. So looking at the skills that you've gained over the years, as well as asking other people what they think you're good at, if you're struggling to identify your own skills, think back about any feedback you've had from any previous managers. And I think as well, it's quite important to give yourself some time to do this, because it can be quite difficult identifying your skills. And I think once you've managed to do this, once you've got an idea of the skills that you have and the ones that you want to use in future jobs, we'll also look at the skills that you would need in any job, you know, things like communication skills, both written and verbal. You need these type of skills in pretty much any job, I would say. Things like interpersonal skills, relationships with people is really important, not just with your colleagues in any job. You might be working with clients, you might be working with suppliers or any other stakeholders or anybody involved with your job. You're looking at how you've built relationships with people in the past, you know, what you did, what skills you needed to do that. Another thing which I think is quite relevant these days is looking at how good you are at dealing with change. You know, over the last sort of 2.5 years, we've all dealt with an enormous amount of change throughout the pandemic. And things change as well at work. Can you demonstrate that you have a certain amount of resilience when you're dealing with change, that you can adapt to change? Classic example for some of the listeners here would be people who have been homeschooling while trying to hold down a job throughout the pandemic. A lot of change, which demonstrates an awful lot of resilience as well, juggling all this. Sometimes if we do things quite natural, it seems it's very natural to us, might not be natural to somebody else. So try and dig deep, I would say, with looking at your skills and seeing what you can find.
Yes, the things that we tend to think, oh God, well, everyone can do that, they often don't tend to be the things that will appear on a job spec or a job description. So it's really interesting, actually, you know, this idea of resilience. Do you see that as an employable skill?
Yes, I think so. Although it's quite difficult to answer yes or no to that question, because I think sometimes people can look at resilience in, I would say, not quite the right way, because sometimes I have seen this with places where I've worked, that people were thought of as not being resilient if they couldn't cope with something. But it might not be that that person's not resilient. It might be that there's something fundamentally wrong with the workplace. You know, it could be that but it could be a toxic environment, for example. You know, I've seen that in a number of places where I've worked, where people were being bullied, they were struggling to cope. It wasn't that they lacked resilience, it was that they were in an awful situation or in a terrible environment. And the best thing sometimes in those situations is to get out, you know, if you can't change it. But I think in general, I would say that resilience is something that for all of us, whether it's at work or outside work, it's definitely something that's very useful to have. And I think it's useful for all of us to build on our resilience for throughout life, really. You know, it could really help you cope with difficulties throughout your working life. But at the same time, not to beat yourself up if you feel that you're lacking in resilience, because it might not be you. It could be the workplace. It could be the systems that you're using. They could be broken. But yet sometimes people are made to feel as though they're the ones that are broken, when in fact that's not the case at all.
Yes, that's a really good point. Thank you for highlighting that. So on to point number three.
I think these kind of all follow on from each other, but the next one was looking at what motivates and energises you. And this relates to what we were saying a few minutes ago about looking at what you enjoy doing, like the experience that you've had and the skills that you have. What were you doing when you felt most alive in the workplace? When you're completely lost in what you're doing and you don't notice the time passing, things that you don't have to force yourself to do, you feel motivated to do them, you feel full of energy when you're doing them. This could be things that you've done in previous jobs or your current job. It can also be things that you're doing outside of work. When I went through a career change a number of years ago, I was volunteering on a mental health helpline, which I absolutely loved, and I was so motivated. I never felt it was an effort to go in and do my shift. It really energised me. I never noticed the time passing. I absolutely loved it. And I ended up moving from a career in publishing, moving into social housing and becoming a mental health support worker. And part of that was because I realised that I felt so different doing my voluntary work on the helpline than I did when I was at work. It was an effort to force myself to go to work in the last job that I had before I left the publishing sector. But it was no effort whatsoever to do a shift in my voluntary job. So that was really what sort of spurred me on. And I knew it would be different. It's not the same when you're a volunteer than when you're a paid member of staff. It is different. You know, you can walk away from voluntary work any time. It's slightly harder to do that in a paid job. But there was such a huge difference in the way I felt between my paid job and my voluntary work that I just sort of knew instinctively that I was doing the right thing by moving, and I was moving in the right direction, trying to find a job, which enabled me to work with people with severe and enduring mental health problems. And I actually think that's one of the most rewarding, fulfilling jobs I've ever had. Yes, so definitely looking at what motivates you and what energises you, and when you feel completely alive in what you're doing and you're lost in what you're doing and you don't notice the time passing, that can be a really key thing. No job is going to be like that all the time. But if you've got at least some of that in your work, then it can really help with making you feel motivated and just enjoying your job, which is really important.
We spend so much of our time there, and yet this idea that you might get into this sense of flow or just really enjoy and not even notice the time passing, that's quite a new idea, isn't it? As I say, in the past, it's been seen as work, hard work, which therefore doesn't always equal enjoyment, and work as a means to an end, a means to earning a salary to be able to then go and do fun things. And actually, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's how valuable our time is. There's the great resignation, people challenging why they need to be in offices doing things that we've always been told we had to do, and actually now finding more fulfillment, even if it's that hard balance, isn't it? Because often you find a role that is really fulfilling, but it doesn't necessarily pay so well. And you have that dialogue with yourself or with whoever you live with, people who are close to you, to say, well, actually, if I'm happier all round, can we make certain compromises on other things so that everyone's benefiting?
Yeah, absolutely. And I sort of went through that similar conversation with myself and my husband when I changed career and moved into working with people with mental health problems, because I knew that it was what I wanted to do. Now, for some people, they viewed that as a step down because I'd had some management responsibility in my previous jobs. I was moving into a job where I had no line management responsibility. The salary was lower, and I was fortunate that I could afford to take a pay cut. It wasn't a huge one, but it still made a difference. So there were a number of factors to consider, and sometimes you do move into a job which pays less, but you enjoy it far more. And that was exactly the situation I was in. And eventually I moved on into other jobs and my salary increased again. But I don't ever regret that because, like I said, I was fortunate that I could afford to do it. I was so much happier in that job. It made such a difference to my life because I think when you're not happy at work, it just affects every other aspect of your life. It affects your home life, affects when you go out with friends, spending time with your partner, your family. I think I can even describe what a difference that made to my life, having a job that I just loved. And it was so rewarding. It felt meaningful. Some of the work I've been doing previously just didn't feel particularly meaningful. It did serve a purpose, but over time, that sort of faded for me and I didn't feel that same enthusiasm that I had done when I first started it. For some people, it looked as though I sort of lacked ambition because I was, in their eyes, it was a step down. But for me, it was a step forward because I was in a job that I enjoyed far more. And it gave me a chance to use skills I'd not really had the chance to use in previous jobs and that I didn't even know I had. So there were so many good things about it. And I did go on and sort of work my way up the ladder to a certain extent. But that wasn't my primary motivation for moving. I just wanted to be happy at work.
Yes.
and I was. So it was definitely worth the move.
I'm really interested in this point you said other people thought or saw it as me giving up or taking a step down or whatever it might be. And how much we let other people's expectations of us influence our career decisions and whether that's people around us or actually even managers. I mean, I remember to this day seeing a job that I really wanted to apply for based in Singapore within the same organisation. And my manager at the time said, oh, no, you don't want to go for that because of X, Y, Z. And he had all these reasons why I didn't want to do it. That's a perfect example of not regretting something I did do. But I do actually regret that I didn't go for that job because I know I would have got it. It would have given us some international experience, et cetera, et cetera. And I would have enjoyed it for a few years. But I let somebody else's views of what I should do impact my decisions. And, you know, perhaps this is slightly off at a tangent from your 5 points, but how do we stay true to what we want to do?
I think a lot of that comes back to self-belief. I think we can all say that we have been influenced by what other people think of us, or we've perhaps been worried by what we think other people think of us, even though we don't actually know. So that can stop people from doing things that they really want to do. I think if you really thought about it and you know that you're doing things for the right reasons. And I think as well, one thing I always say to people, and I try and do this myself, is let your values guide you. You have an idea of what your own personal values are. I mean, every company will tell you what their values are, whether or not people actually live or work by them is another matter. But if you know what your own values are, and you can always tell when you're doing things that are not aligned with your own values, because you do feel, well, certainly I do, I feel a sort of a tension or a friction that something's not quite right. Mm. But it does come back to a certain extent to self-belief. And it can be very easy if a manager has said, oh, no, I don't think you'll be very good at this, or I don't think you should do that. You can be influenced by them simply because they're in a more senior position. That doesn't mean that they know you better than you know yourself, you know. So, yes, it is a difficult one, but I think always go back to your values.
Yes, good points, good points. So moving swiftly on, what's your fourth point?
My fourth point was about thinking about how you can add value to potential employers. So this does relate to skills to a certain extent, but not just thinking about the skills that you have that you can bring with you to another employer, but think about the achievements that you've had from previous jobs. Not necessarily just jobs, it could be things that you've done outside work. Think about what you're particularly proud of. And if you can show examples to demonstrate to potential employers how you can bring value to their company. So in terms of work, it could be things like, have you previously delivered projects on time and within budget? Did you save your employer money? Or did you bring in money to the company? Did you find new clients? Were you particularly good at motivating your team? And did you meet targets or exceed targets? There's lots and lots of things that if you sort of sit and think about what you've done over the years, I suppose a similar kind of exercise that you might do when you're looking back at your experience and identifying your skills, but really looking at where you can add value to a prospective employer and finding ways of demonstrating that in your application or in your interview. There will be lots of other candidates probably for any job. So you want to find ways that you can stand out. And by showing how you can add value to an employer, that can really sort of help distinguish you from the other candidates.
Yeah, certainly. It can be hard to think objectively about that? Because again, naturally we are brought up, and we have talked about this on the podcast, we're brought up to not necessarily list all the things we think we're great at. So I don't know, whether you suggest asking former colleagues or asking people if you're struggling to find some things on your own.
Yes, definitely. If you're struggling to identify your skills, you might find that other people can be quite helpful in that respect. But it's the same with thinking about how you can add value. If you have a good relationship with previous managers that you've had, and if you trust them, they might be good people to ask. Friends, other colleagues, people who know you well. I guess people who you've worked with before might be quite useful in this area, because they've seen how you work, seen what you've achieved. It's very easy to sit there and think, oh, I can't think of anything. You know, I can't think of anything I've achieved. I can't think of anything I'm good at. But there will be lots of things. And I know it's easy to say, but give yourself a bit of quiet space if possible, which I know can be very difficult for a lot of people. And actually just give yourself some time to think about what you've done over the last however many years and look at what you have achieved, because there will be achievements there. Even if you don't think of them as achievements yourself, there will be things. And if you're really stuck, you know, think about what did your previous or your current manager, what do they compliment you on? If they give you any feedback at all, will show how you can add value. And also as well, just go, as you would do with experience, go through the job description, the person's spec, and see what they're looking for. That might just trigger a few ideas in your head as well. There will undoubtedly be things that you've done that, even if you don't view them as achievements or things that can show how you can add value, there will definitely be things there. So if your first thought is, I can't think of anything, don't accept that.
Yeah.
Dig deeper and you will find things.
Yes, that's very good advice. Very good indeed. Especially if you've seen a job you want to apply for. I mean, that often comes up from members of our community. They've seen a job on paper, it will be their dream job, but they don't feel they've necessarily got the perfect skill set for it. But look at that job description. What is it that appeals to you? And then how is it that your experience reflects that?
I mean, there's times I've looked at job descriptions and I can't imagine anybody would actually have all the criteria they're looking for.
That's true. You know, that is very true.
Done a lot of recruitment myself, but sometimes the hiring manager doesn't always know exactly what they're looking for either. So, you know, you have this very extensive job description and person spec, and it might be that there's nobody out there who actually meets every single thing. So it's always worth applying for. You know, if you know that you meet at least some of it, it's worth going for.
Exactly.
Because it's time consuming when you are looking for a new job, and it can be stressful. But yes, you don't need to meet every single criteria, and there will undoubtedly be things that you've done or qualities or skills that you possess that will definitely bring value to another employer.
Yes, definitely. All good points. So coming on to your final tip for job searchers.
So, well, my final tip was, we've actually sort of partly covered this already, but it was find ways of staying resilient. And by that, I mean that changing jobs or career is not always easy. It can take time. You might be rejected from several jobs before you find one that you want. And it can be very easy for your confidence to be knocked. You know, if you are spending a lot of time applying for jobs, putting a lot of effort into application forms or cover letters or whatever, it can be quite demoralising if you're getting a number of knockbacks and you're facing rejection over and over again. So try and find ways of keeping your energy levels up and keeping your spirits up. Deep down, you know that you can do the jobs that you're applying for. And I think it's important to be realistic as well, that particularly if you're changing career, or you're looking to find a job in a different sector, this can take a lot longer than trying to find another job in a similar or the same sector that you're currently in. When I moved from publishing into social housing, it took about 18 months for me to get my first job as a mental health support worker. I wasn't constantly applying for jobs during that time, but on and off I was. So it can take a long time. So try and be realistic. And also, if you are applying for jobs and you're getting interviews, but you're not getting the job, it's always worth asking for feedback. Even if you don't agree with some of it, you know, it's always worth asking for feedback, because if there are things that you haven't thought about that you can work on, you can do that before the next application. Sometimes it's not easy hearing the feedback, but it's always worth asking for it. It just gives you something to go on that you might be able to use for future job applications. But yeah, it's not easy. And as I say, if you're facing rejection on a number of occasions, it can be very easy to think, oh, I'm just going to give up, it's not going to happen. But, you know, try and stay resilient, keep your energy levels up, be around people who make you feel good about yourselves and who are supportive. So if you do have family or friends who are very supportive, you know, lean on them. It will happen, but sometimes it can take a while to find another job. So yeah, it's just about being realistic and not getting too downhearted if you do face a number of rejections before you finally get that job that you want.
Yes, really good points there. I remember I worked with someone once who was made redundant, and they had then gone off and done this whole sort of spreadsheet of the companies they wanted to work for, or the type of companies they wanted to work for. They'd worked out how many firms there were there, then how many of those firms had the kind of job that he wanted, and how often that job was likely to come up. And he'd done this whole kind of spreadsheet and actually worked out it was probably going to take him about 18 months minimum to get this job, to get his next job. A bit over the top, maybe, but it meant that he went into his job search process with realistic expectations about the amount of time it was going to take. And I always tell people, you only need one job. That's the thing. You're only looking for one. So just keep at it, keep plugging away, and eventually you will succeed. Keep refining, using all the techniques and tactics you've just discussed. But yeah, it can be really hard to remain positive.
Definitely, yes, it really can. And you might find that you find a job very quickly, in which case that's fantastic. But if it doesn't happen, and sometimes people, when they are facing a number of rejections or knockbacks, and it can make them doubt themselves or think that they're not good enough, that's not necessarily the case, because you don't always know why you didn't get the job. You know, you might get some feedback, but there could be an internal candidate who was always likely to get that job. I know that's not always the case, but sometimes that can happen. There could be all sorts of reasons that you're just not aware of. And feedback will give you so much, but there could be all sorts of things going on within the company that you just don't know about. So, yeah, I would say try not to let it get you down too much, because even if you are turned down for a number of jobs, that doesn't mean that you're not skilled or qualified or you don't have the right experience. Sometimes I wouldn't quite say it's luck, but I think sometimes it can be a certain
It can, definitely. I absolutely think a lot of it is luck, especially when you consider that, I don't know, there's some statistic, more than 70% of people find a job through their network or jobs that are not advertised, and, you know, it's right place, right time kind of thing. So I think luck definitely plays. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily that there's something wrong with you if you're not getting jobs. It could be any other reason. But yeah, so it's just trying to stay positive if you can.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Absolutely loads of real gems of advice there. And of course, people can find out more about working with you in a more bespoke fashion on something that they themselves want to achieve via the links in our show notes or via our website. So thank you very much indeed, Aileen.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed the conversation. So thank you for having me on.
Lots of great advice there from Aileen, and great to hear how she's done it, not just once, not just changed career once. She's changed different industries, from publishing to the third sector and now coaching. So proof that it really can be done at any point in your career. We're going to leave now for the Christmas break. I hope everyone has a wonderful time, and we'll be back again in January. Thanks so much for all your support over the last year. It's been amazing to have you on, and huge thanks to all of my guests over 2022. I've loved talking to you. I've learned so much from you, and I've really enjoyed doing this podcast. Thanks, and Happy New Year.